This is a download from the BBC. For more information and our terms of use, please go to bbcworldservice.com/podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Africa Today podcast from the BBC at 15:30 GMT. It's Wednesday, the 4th of July. I'm Akwesi Sapong in the pod today. Kenya charges three musicians for inciting ethnic violence with their music. What's the problem?
When you have songs that demonize, that objectify communities or individuals, then it means that you have no problem if I said kill this person.
We ask Fatou Bensouda, the new prosecutor at the International Criminal Court, if she intends to bring Boko Haram before the ICC, and Africa's role in the apparent discovery of a new subatomic particle. Now, how far can musicians go in their support of political candidates? This music and tunes like it, combined with metaphorical lyrics that reference the Bible, has landed three Kenyan musicians in trouble. Kamande Wa Kioi, Muigai Wa Njoroge and John D. Matthew were arrested last week and today were charged for inciting ethnic violence with their songs. Authorities said the lyrics were intended to cause hatred, hostility and discrimination between the Luo and Kikuyu ethnic tribes. From Nairobi, Dayo Youssef reports.
The three musicians denied the charges of inciting ethnic violence through their songs. The songs, which are written and recorded in Kikuyu language, one of the most popular tribes in Kenya, were played in some radio stations in the country and on the internet, and are believed to use metaphors and parables to undermine members of the Luo community. They are said to sing praises of the presidential candidate from their tribe, Uhuru Kenyatta, while vowing to back him up as he faces the International Criminal Court on charges of crimes against humanity during the 2008 post-election violence. The case was filed in court by the National Cohesion and Integration Commission. The laws in Kenya have brought the phrase, "Watch your mouth," to a whole new level by putting in place a law that bans any hate speech or incitements against another person during public rallies, campaigns, speeches or any other form of communication. The stringent laws were designed to avoid a repeat of 2008 post-election violence that rocked the nation, where over 1,000 people were killed and thousands others left homeless. Meanwhile, Mr. Kenyatta's party has said they have no connection to the musicians. The three singers were released on a $1,200 bail and could face up to 3 years in jail if found guilty.
The BBC's Dayo Youssef in Nairobi. Well, as we heard, the case against the three musicians was brought by Kenya's National Cohesion and Integration Commission, set up to curb hate speech after the last election. Mzalendo Kibunja is the commission's chairman. So I asked him what worries him about the songs.
Some of them have metaphors, but when you interpret them, if you are a Kikuyu speaker, those are metaphors that are insulting and they are really threatening also in a way.
So what is it exactly that you're worried about?
I'm worried about the possibility of many, many more songs coming up in different languages also, intimidating, insulting, and also threatening other communities using metaphors, considering that every time we have elections in Kenya, we do two things for sure. We kill each other and also we kill our economy. And when you have these kind of songs being played in political rallies or in a social place like bars, then it means that if those metaphors are meant to address you, people will take the wrong things to try and chase these communities away from each other.
Kenya is expecting to go to the polls very soon. It's typical to see people, musicians, put together songs in which they criticize politicians. Are you saying it is, especially in a democracy, unacceptable to criticize politicians?
What we are against as a commission is where you use metaphors that make other people look like animals, where you make people think that a certain community are animals, for example, hyenas. If I tell you to kill a hyena, you kill, or calling them snakes, or calling all sorts of things. But when you have songs that demonize, that objectify communities or individuals, then it means that you have no problem if I said kill this person.
Is this inspired by, you know, concerns you may have about events in other countries, for example in Rwanda, where, you know, people are known to have gone on radio to, you know, call political opponents or people from other ethnic groupings as cockroaches, for example? Are you inspired in events of that nature?
Absolutely. absolutely. Not even, talking about Rwanda, in 2007, 2008, there are people who are calling each other, what are the spots? So if you are washing your clothes and you have spots on it, you won't even to use the strongest bridge. And that's what happened with Rift Valley. So this kind of objectifying people, which you can easily identify who they are, is what we are worried as a commission. We know, for example, there is a freedom of speech, Section 33 of the Constitution, but it says that there are limitations to that freedom of speech, particularly as it regards to hate speech. And hate speech in Kenya is defined by the National Cohesion Integration Act, and also propaganda of war and also threatening language.
How do you respond to this from a defense lawyer for these three musicians who are being charged? He's saying that this really is a gross abuse of the court process, and that basically what you're doing is applying a criminal interpretation to artistic works.
Let's leave it to the court. And if the court doesn't think that what our interpretation is correct, they will be acquitted. If they think we are right, then they will make the right judgment. And for me, us taking these kinds of cases to court tells you that if you have an issue, even after we vote and you have an issue, then you take it to court and they will give you the right, the fair judgment that everyone is looking forward to.
And that's Ms. Lendo Kibunja. He's the chairman of Kenya's National Cohesion and Integration Commission. Now, what gives objects around us their mass or weight? Well, this might not seem to you or me such a fundamental question, but scientists around the world have been trying to find the answer for decades. And this morning, an announcement came from the European Organization for Nuclear Research, or CERN, that its scientists have probably discovered the particle which could explain all, not least a bit more about the origin of the universe, the Higgs boson. Now, four universities in South Africa have taken part in the process that led to this discovery, Witwatersrand in Johannesburg being one of them. Dr. Trevor Vicky lectures at the School of Physics there. On the line from CERN, I asked him what exactly that elusive particle is.
About 40 years ago, some theorists in particle physics came up with some bits and pieces for what we now refer to as the standard model of particle physics. And this Higgs mechanism was actually introduced as a way of giving mass to the other fundamental particles. So, you might have a textbook in school and it weighs a certain amount. And, you know, we know about Newton and gravity, and we know that if I drop the textbook on the floor, it's going to fall. But what our theories hadn't told us up until that point was basically why that textbook has the mass that it does. And so this idea of the Higgs mechanism, this Higgs particle, this is actually, it interacts with the electrons or the proton inside the atoms of your textbook, and it gives them mass.
Right. At this point, I'm beginning to get lost. Why is this so important?
If we don't have massive particles, then basically, everything's going to be massless and fly around at high speeds, and our universe as we know it won't even exist. So we won't have, solid objects. The Earth would not be here. The solar system and the universe as we know it would be a very, very different place.
Is it accurate to say then that this discovery could help scientists explain the origin of our universe?
Yeah, it goes to that. A very, very minute fraction of seconds after the Big Bang, there was an event called electroweak symmetry breaking. And so this is the point which you had photons, which are basically your light particles, your beams of light coming from the sun. These are massless particles. So you have the photon, which is massless, and then you have the heavy particles, the particles that actually have mass, like these quarks and electron. And so this moment of electroweak symmetry breaking very, very early in the universe, this is the moment when, a photon became very different from, let's say, the electron, in the sense that the photon doesn't have mass, but these other particles, they do.
How was South Africa involved in this project?
At CERN, we actually have a couple general purpose detectors. So there's the ATLAS experiment, and all the South African institutes, they all collaborate together on just that one experiment. But there's also a separate detector. So this is called the CMS experiment, and they also presented their results. And so what was presented today, the Higgs boson search results, these were the results from the CMS collaboration, 3,000 or more physicists, and then the results from the ATLAS collaboration, which is another set of 3,000 or so physicists, and two different apparatuses.
For the ordinary person listening to you explain all of this, say in Addis Ababa or in Accra or Kampala, what should this mean to them?
The Atlas experiment, it's going to run for 20, 25 years, and it's going to actually provide a lot of data for lots and lots of students, not necessarily just from South Africa. I mean, we do get at Witwatersrand a lot of students from all over Africa. So these students, you know, they come from the Congo, they attend Witwatersrand, they study their PhD, and they don't necessarily all finish with their PhD and go into academia. A lot of people with physics PhDs are good at solving problems. And a lot of these people, they have a wide range of expertise and talents. So some of these people, even though they get a PhD in physics, they might return home to the Congo, let's say, and start doing some IT stuff. Or maybe they'll go off somewhere else and do some finance stuff. Or maybe they'll do something with medicine.
And that's Dr. Trevor Vicky from the University of Witwatersrand. Fatou Bensouda, the new prosecutor at the International Criminal Court, is in Nigeria today. Mrs. Bensouda has been briefing President Goodluck Jonathan on the ICC's preliminary examination into the Boko Haram insurgency, which she's described as crimes against humanity. Well, I called up Mrs. Bensouda in Nigeria and asked her if she intended to bring Boko Haram before the International Criminal Court.
That is not the intention right now, because, as you know, we have not opened investigations, neither have we even started preliminary examination in Mali. But Mali is a state party under the Rome Statute, and these alleged crimes are taking place on the territory of Mali. So it is appropriate, of course, to warn those who are committing these crimes that this could potentially be war crimes under the Rome Statute.
So you are taking action with respect to Mali because of these attacks on national heritage sites. And yet in Nigeria, where you have actually said that the Boko Haram's attacks qualify to be crimes against humanity, you are not taking any action yet there.
I think the visit to Nigeria is a very important one. We have said, of course, that we are not investigating Nigeria, neither have we shown yet any intention to investigate, because Nigeria is under preliminary examination at the moment. And the purpose of my visit is to follow up on information that we need to continue our assessment and analysis of the crimes that are taking place, but also to discuss other issues like general cooperation with Nigeria.
Can you explain why the destruction of religious structures in Mali seem to qualify for an ICC investigation or interest and the killing of people in Nigeria? Because people will not understand that.
No, I never said that these were crimes and these are not. I think you should take it in context. In Mali, we are not investigating yet. We have not opened preliminary examination. But as I said, Mali is part of the ICC system, and we have received reports that these destruction are taking place. So for this stage, of this phase, what we need to do is to put them on notice, because no preliminary examination is taking place. Whereas in Nigeria, I am not saying that they are not crimes. In fact, I have categorically said that what has happened, even though it's being termed as terrorist attack, but they could qualify as crimes against humanity. But Nigeria is investigating. In fact, right now, I am in a meeting where we are meeting with the authorities at the technical level to see what Nigeria is doing and the steps that Nigeria is taking to address this crime.
But Madam Bensouda, I think people will say that the attacks by Boko Haram have been going on for a while now. Clearly, the Nigerian government has shown itself unable or unwilling to take action, and the ICC should be stepping in. Time is of the essence, isn't it?
Time is of the essence, and we have been receiving information and analyzing it. Contrary to what you are saying, we are being provided with information which shows that they are investigating into the crimes, that attempts are made to even prosecute some people with regards to these crimes. If this is happening, ICC will have to wait. ICC cannot jump in and start investigating.
But is the ICC satisfied? Sorry for butting in, madam, but is the ICC satisfied that Nigeria has ably, competently dealt with the problem of the Boko Haram? Because as we speak, at least 1,000 lives, 1,000 people have been killed. The Boko Haram has claimed responsibility, and it doesn't seem as if the problem is going away anytime soon.
I think this is a process. I don't think that we should conclude right away and say that Nigeria is not capable of doing it, therefore we're coming in. It is in phases, It's a process in which we will receive information as we are doing now. I'm currently in Nigeria, as you know. We are receiving what has been done. We are receiving what has been planned. And based on this, we will be able to assess whether Nigeria is in a position to address these crimes or not.
The prosecutor for the International Criminal Court, Fatou Bensouda, there on the line from Abuja. And that's it for today. Thank you for downloading the Africa Today podcast from the BBC, recorded weekdays at 15:30 GMT. You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter and Google Plus. Our username is BBC Africa and our website, bbcafrica.com. I'm Akwesi Sapo. Until next time, bye-bye.